At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, At the Races here on Sirius XM. Johnny D joining us from ExpressBet after a fascinating weekend. It really started on Friday with the fantasy card at Oaklawn and then into Saturday, Gulfstream, Tampa, and Oaklawn with a 14-race slate that really had everybody excited, and hopefully people did all right. It was, as I mentioned, kind of an interesting card that you have to be pretty tactical, I think, to score. Johnny, good morning.
Stevie, so good to be with you on this beautiful Monday morning.
They're all beautiful, Johnny. Every morning. Every morning you wake up.
Well...
you're going to debate?
I get your point, but we don't know because nobody's come back to tell us what the other side's like. So we'll leave that for another time discussion.
Well, let's dive in because there's a million different directions to go. You know, usually at about this time after Oaks Derby weekend, I mean, you and I, our heads are swimming. There's a little, you know, a little bit more of a compact set of results, but there's sidebars to the results. And then there's, you know, there's all the interesting things that are really happening, kind of associated with the situation in the game, including the, you know, the television coverage, which it's just unprecedented. I mean, there's as much racing on television as there ever possibly could be, including, you know, the rather silly but somewhat entertaining virtual race between the Triple Crown winners, which I haven't mentioned, and as Haskin suggested, Secretariat couldn't lose, and he didn't. There were some oddities in there. I don't know why World Away was so close up and why American Pharoah was so far back, but all right, so be it. How did you make out this weekend?
Well, I missed the exact secretary to American Pharoah. You know, but another bad ride. That's all. Blame the job. it was a great weekend. The most upsetting thing to me, it really got me going, was I tried to catch the Turtle Derby. I missed it live. But then I tried to catch them. And then they wanted me to sign in with Google or something, you know, and it's just like, you know, I just said, Turtle Derby, look up my password, sign in. I never did get to the Turtle Derby. I may at some point stop and go back because I really did want to hear Larry Holmes call the race, which I understood he was going to call the race. And so that was my only my biggest disappointment of the weekend. Handicapping Saturday's card, look, when they give you cards like that, you can hardly sleep the night before. It's like a kid on Christmas because there were so many opportunities whether you could come away with any of them. That's certainly another story. But the chances were there. The opportunities were there. And in true horse player fashion, I waited until the last race to save my bacon. I had the exact in the last race pretty good, and it cleared the slate and sent me to bed with some money in my pocket. So but I think the last winner paid $36, and exact paid $150, $151, something like that. And so that was enough to get. I was happy. On the other side of the coin, as far as the entertainment value, the fan side of things, hey, you know, you got to see definitely two top horses run and a group of other extremely talented horses who are a cut below them. You got to see two races that, you know, once again, if you've got pace, it really makes a difference. It helps. You know, and people say, well, this track was speed favoring. Well, on big days, everybody says, oh, they souped up the track. Yeah. Some days the track seems, well, there are good horses running in every race. Yes, sometimes the track is a little firmer. I don't necessarily think that was the case Saturday, but I thought it was another example of, you know, it's so much better to have speed. It's such a weapon. It really is. Let's start with Charleston's race. That race was over when the overnight came out. And then we had the further scratch in there of the only other horse that maybe could, you know, put some heat on Charleston. That left Charleston pretty much in a, you know, must break, but barring that hurdle, pretty much didn't think that one could lose. And I wasn't alone. I think 2-5 were the final odds. And really, if you're a horse like Governor Marsh, let's say, you need something in front of you to help you get there first. You're a grinder. You're not a speed horse. You're not a excuse me. You're not a stone closer, but you need something up front to happen to help you get there. And it just wasn't there. Basin, a speed horse for sure, was sent out of there with, you know, intentions of making a lead if something happened to Charleston at the start. Because in like two or three strides, it was clear Charleston, you know, has the lead, and Basin settled into, you know, jockey has to be smart. You're coming from the 11 hole. You've got to clear everyone else. But if the rail horse has more speed than you, you're going to be sitting off the rail horse when they hit the first turn. And that's kind of, there were two different races. There was the race with Charleston over the field, and then there was the race with Basin. Actually, kind of, if you forget Charleston was in the race and just looked at the race with everybody else, Basin kind of got a front-running kind of trip, you know, where wasn't really challenged. I know Dior was up there for a little while, but wasn't really pressuring Basin. And there really was no other speed horse besides Basin. So Basin got to sit second in a race of his own. Now, sometimes what happens in a case like this, we have one dominant speed horse that gets the lead, another horse who maybe doesn't have as much speed, but his best chance of winning is to get to the front. Well, then, at some point in the race, that jockey will go after the leader and challenge the leader and go all out to force the leader's hand. But in this case, I think Santana on Basin was looking at Charlton and realizing Martin Garcia on Charlton and realizing he's breathing. If I go after him, I'm dead. You know, my horse is working as hard as he can to go these, you know, what were the fractions? 109, I think they went 9-3, 46, 22-4. So I think if you look at the race that way, it's a interesting way to look at things, as if there was Charleston in his race And then there was Basin setting the pace in a separate race. And because Basin didn't go after Charlatan all out at any point, it allowed him to continue on to be second. And, I mean, coming out of the race, and Odor was a disappointment for me because I, well, not a big disappointment, but because that last race was really, the Risen Star was really a disappointment. But I thought this horse might have some potential at three, and just it just hasn't materialized. But those good races at two, and this is what happens. And we talk about it all the time. From two to three, you better mature. You better get faster because everybody else is. And, you know, we all liken it to, you know, you're a freshman in college. When you go from high school to college, I don't care if you were the best player in your conference. You must get better. You must get stronger. You must get faster because the competition, the level rises. So he was kind of disappointing. As far as who else in that race, plus or minus, we talked about Governor Morris a little bit. I don't think there was much else to discuss, except that Charlatan was getting withers above that field. His early speed is a vicious weapon. And he used it. He said, well, he slowed down late. He did. He slowed down late. Now, is that, you know, I heard your discussion with Sid the other day about Spikestown, Sid Fernando. I don't know if that's a little Spikestown at the mile and eighth. He certainly went rapid early, so he should slow down. And if he was slowing down, what about the rest of the guys chasing him? They were really slowing down. So, you know, and Charlatan's just an outstanding three-year-old colt, and it's another example. You know, Baffert gets these horses like Saban gets football players. You know, he's got like a truckload of them, and it's difficult for someone else to come up with, even compete. All winter long, and I know I said it on your show, there's Hizbul Law and four Baffert. We couldn't tell which Baffert. We still can't tell, I don't think, which Baffert is, you know, hard line better than another one. We have opinions, like since these two horses, Charlton and Nadal, ran on the same card, same distance, you want to compare them, and looking at the fractional times and the way things develop, maybe you would take Nadal over Charlton at this point. But you know, it's Tis the Law and three or four backwards, and we're still there. I don't think anybody's changed that opinion. There are other good horses, but you know, Baffert's got three or four of the best. So that was the first division. The second division, Nadal just, you know, again, the speed, what an important point speed is, because Wells Bayou from the outside gate did exactly what he was expected to do, what he was supposed to do, his chance of winning, that was it. You know, try and pop the gate, hope that Nadal maybe doesn't break well, King Guillermo maybe doesn't break well. You get to the front, you got to get over anyway. You clear, and you settle, and survive. And he did most of that, but he couldn't survive. Nadal was just too much horse for him. And that's as simple as that. And maybe you could say, well, Bayou had to hustle, you know, to get out and get over. But when Nadal came to him and knocked on the door, nobody was home. So that tells you that Nadal just went by him. King Guillermo ran well. He had a perfect trip, rail run, saved ground. No real excuse, didn't overextend himself early, got settled into a perfect spot. The way it turned out, you know, we certainly knew it had more pace in it, more early pace than the first division. And the ones that figured to be the pace were King Guillermo, Nadal, and Wells Bayou. Well, it turned out that way, that they were the ones with the speed. But what also turned out is, number one, they're very good horses. And Nadal particularly, and King Guillermo, you know, asserted himself well, too. But the second thing is, nobody got stupid. Nobody got silly. In other words, Wells Bayou was sent, cleared, and then Nadal moved up outside of it. He had been trained to stalk a horse in the morning, and he'd learned his lesson. He got to the outside, and King Guillermo was comfortable to sit in behind him, which makes perfect sense. And Nadal didn't run off, and Guillermo didn't run off. King Guillermo didn't run off. They sat, they stalked, they waited for their turn. And when their turn came, they waited until Nadal waited until the final turn, to make his move. And so nobody got silly. Nobody moved like prematurely or forced the pace. Was crisp. Nothing soft about that pace. It was fine. I think they went 9 and change also, 9 and 4. So the pace was fast.
Legit.
Yeah, but nobody did anything silly. And I think that allowed, well, what it did, a couple things. It allowed, excuse me, King Guillermo to, you know, continue on, and to his credit, finish second. But it also hindered the late runners because there wasn't that collapse. And again, there wasn't that collapse. Because these are very good horses. Sometimes horses that are on the lead, whether they're challenged or not, excuse me, they're just not that good. And they're caught by closers. And in this case, they went fast, they went legit, but there was no pressure pace. And the leaders are solid horses. So the closers really had a tough time making up ground. And if I look through the field and I give you some opinions, Storm the Court, here's another, what do you want to say, 2-year-old that moved to 3 and never, and didn't, as of yet, make that step. And I would have to say, you know, they got to figure out something else because he's just not quite, you know, he's a 2-year-old champ. But he just didn't make that step. And the world is littered with these examples. And as horse players, we have to, and fans, we have to look at these horses at 2, and then it's a different case at 3. You know, it's not a completely wipe the page, but, you know, you kind of block out half the page. Because it is a new season, it's a new year, and horses mature, and part of the handicapping process is understanding that these are living, breathing, improving, going backwards, whatever. They're moving. They're changing. And you have to understand that. You have to handicap with that in mind. So Storm the Court has not really stepped up. King Guillermo, we talked about. Silver Prospector, you know, it seems like if it's his day, they'll be there if the pace is fast enough and contentious enough and conditions are right. He'll be there, but if not, he's a closer. He needs help up front. Tyshawn, I don't know. I kind of was kicking myself because I thought he would run well. I know he blew a lead the other day in the Oaklawn Stakes, but I thought that he made a huge move into a hot to middle pace, and I thought that move, when he got to the lead, I thought that had taken everything out of him. But I was dead wrong. I was dead, and I also think maybe something happened to him, because he not only ran poorly, he ran like something went wrong. I don't know what, but he didn't run at all. So I was disappointed in that as far as my personal analysis of everything else. Farmington Road made a middle move from the back of the pack, looked like he was going to do some damage, and then he didn't follow through. But no one's coming back in this race, really, except, Wells Bayou tired from his early efforts. And the one that killed my trifectas, I didn't see Finnick the Fierce. I mean, maybe he tries every time, and in my analysis, my horse-by-horse analysis of the race, I noted that he tries every time, and you look at his PPs, he does, and he's just kind of, maybe he's just coming into his own. I just didn't think he was quite fast enough yet to hit the try. There were too many others. The ticket was getting a little big, too many others that I thought, would be around, and I didn't give him enough respect, but he ran really well. He ran really well. Is this a sign? He was second last time out in an allowance race. Actually, he was placed first because of interference, and maybe he's just come into his own. Maybe he's one of these kind that at three has just taken a nice step forward. So I didn't see that train coming, so that train caught me crossing the track. But then there was the last race, and I got out, so that was great. Is that enough for you, Steve?
Yeah, a couple of follow-ups, including Finnick the Fierce. I made the point later or early in the evening. I don't really understand why Patch, the other most recent notable one-eyed horse, why Patch, I called it Patch Mania, why there was such carrying on over Patch, and there doesn't seem to be nearly as much carrying on or interest in Finnick the Fierce, who also has one eye and is actually really compromised because it's his right eye, and so when he gets drawn inside, he has no idea what's happening to his outside. And here he was drawing the rail, and Martin Garcia got to know him in that allowance you referenced. This is a really plucky horse, and got nothing but respect for what Ray Hernandez is doing with him. And he definitely made a nice forward move. I mean, he hadn't topped out above an 80 buyer and if you're a Thoroughgraph user, sixes on Thoroughgraph. And he had actually, Johnny, indicated getting back to the six that he might be ready to move forward. I thought being inside was going to be a problem. Martin Garcia had a very good day. There's a lot of people who love to dump all over Martin Garcia. There's a lot of people who love to dump over their pet jock, whipping jock, whoever it may be. I think the Talamo, the Talamo Tallywhackers, they had their chance on Saturday. I don't know what was the plan on Mr. Freeze. That was bizarre. But anyway, Martin Garcia gets roughed up a little too often, and I think he's had a really notable meet, and he certainly finished it with a nice flourish. But yeah, Finnick the Fierce, nice job. I know that Team Martinez, Victoria's Ranch, Victor Martinez and company, they were thrilled with the follow-up by King Guillermo, so he'll continue to tread water. And, the fact is, you called it. When Shooter's Shoot came out, that race had, there was no chance, really, that Charlatan, I mean, he literally, something unusual would have had to have happened. What were your thoughts about the Philly race? Because Gamine and Speech, the two of them put on a show.
Yeah, I think we really did have some amazing racing this weekend, and you could go from top to bottom. And I know what I wanted to ask. I wanted to comment about you said earlier. You mentioned that in your handicapping this weekend, it was hard to grab a hold of something, or put a handle,
make
get
money.
A handle.
Yeah,
yeah. It was like, you know, this was a tough. First of all, when the fields are as big as they were at Oaklawn Saturday, that makes it tough right out of the box. Large fields make it harder, obviously, and smaller fields. Well, let's just say that. Start there. Then, when you move forward and say, these fields are very competitive because there aren't any other options. In other words, there's not, you know, on the ship here, I'm going to go here, I'm going to take, we're going to duck that spot, we're going to go. There's no spot. You're running here or you're not running. You know, it's not like, you've got eight condition books in your back pocket. So that has, you know, brought guys from California, from Kentucky guys, New York guys, brought everyone together in this spot. And it has made the racing very competitive. And so it was hard to, as I like to say, it's hard to draw a line. It's hard to break any eggs, you know? It's hard to draw a line through the horses because the fields were so competitive. You'd find maybe, I think I found in an average race, I would find maybe three or four that I would say, well, there are two of them I can't see at all, and maybe another two or three are not for me. You know, I don't see what I need to see. So you're still left with, if you do that, you're still left with, you know, six or seven. You're like, yeah, well, you know, if it's the pace of this or this guy improves a little or, you know. So that's what it's. Now, I was thinking about this in another conversation over the weekend I was having with someone about racing, how everything has been condensed. And that I mentioned last week that, you know, this isn't, I'm not going to suggest that this is a good idea, that we always do this, but it just kind of shows you, and I think you can point to the professional sports leagues when expansion came around. But there was a dilution of talent. You know, there's no doubt about it. When you had a professional league and you had 400 players or 500 players, and all of a sudden you go to 800 players, there's going to be a dilution of talent. And I think what we saw this weekend was a concentration of talent. You know, it forced these trainers, you know, it's not like you can wait. And, you know, you look at the overnight and say, oh, you know, let's wait until next time. You can't wait till next. You don't know when there's going to be a next time. So it kind of brought everyone together at Oaklawn and at Gulfstream and at Tampa Bay. I don't know about the little tracks because I'm not as familiar with where the horses come from. I don't know if that was just their local stock continuing to carry the show. But I know in the other places, at Gulfstream, you know, a lot of the guys that normally would ship north didn't ship north. So it, you know, made the racing better. I think that's what we enjoyed these last couple of weeks, a concentration of talent. And it made things challenging for horse players.
I'll be honest. I didn't mean it really that way, to be frank. To me, it was...
I know you
the contender.
I'm showing you the right way to think of it.
No, it was an engaging card. It was not the greatest betting card. I mean, in terms of that competitiveness. I mean, I only handicapped and rode up and focused on, because it's funny, that third race that they carded on Saturday, the Arkansas Bread Allowance, that was to me an absolute quagmire. And I said, I'm not playing the early pick four because that thing is just quicksand. And you get a 34-1 shot that, I mean, to me, that was a complete roulette spin. But you start to get into the meat of the card, you know, Bank, the 3-2 well-bred Asmussen runner, the one that was a half to brilliant speed, 3-2 winner. You did have, you know, Quality Warrior jump in there and stay on at 10-1. So if you thought that speed would hold and could maybe that horse could wire, maybe you did okay, because the other obvious players in there, Major Attraction, the Gary and Mary West horse for Catman, and Uncle Aduma, they were obvious. So you had first, third, and fourth were completely obvious. You had a completely obvious trifecta in that allowance race with Endorsed and Bankit. It was really, you know, one or the others, and Lannery kind of screwed the pooch a little with Pirate's Punch from the outside. You had the maiden race where it absolutely was either Zito or Michael McCarthy, and it was Zito with Hunt the Front and Friars Road. I mean, this was all just these were all just sort of automatic. In the seventh, it was Gamin, Speech, and Ain't No Elmers were the only three to really look at. You got to the eighth race, you could have done okay. That Duke's Up, it was sort of my, you know, fourth, fifth horse in there, and Moretti, you know, was much the best at 5-2. The horse that was completely inexplicable was Dumpf. Dumpf now with Diodoro. So, you know, the people who want to, you know, spit and scream, I guess I can't blame them when it comes to that one. Rushy and Candy Tycoon and Background in Prodigious Bay, they were the only four horses. And Ginobili, he was also eligible. I mean, this was just one fairly automatic outcome after another. That's all. I mean, that was my point. Not to say that, you know, I hit all the pick fours, all the pick fives. I didn't. And I also got out with the winner in the nightcap. But it was a weird, it was entertaining. It was good racing. It wasn't a productive slate for people that, you know, generally, I mean, if you bet favorites and bet logical horses and put them together, fine. But if you're somebody that likes to take middle price, I mean, I take middle price long shots, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12-1, and I key off of them. I made very few bets other than the multis and a couple of punches here and there. And then in the nightcap, when I got knocked out by my standards, you know, I keyed off of Doro in the nightcap and got out. But I didn't think it was good for viewing pleasure. It was not great gambling opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, certainly later in the day it was very chalky. But, you know, the other problem is it kind of shows you what pick fours, pick fives. It shows you the pick sixes. Shows you why they're so terribly difficult. Because you'll have a horse like Dump just come along and...
Yeah.
Or the horse you mentioned earlier in the day. You have those horses who you can't find. You know, it's like you look at the race. I don't know. Now, God created the all button, but you can't hit that too often, you know. And that's what makes these pick fives and pick sixes so really hard, because you can't cover enough horses. And then when one hits that you wouldn't have covered anyway, You know, I don't. Okay, if you would have said, it's Theodoro, got to use it. Well, but you look at the, you know, the figures and you do your handicapping.
No,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I can't.
There
I
were
can't
seven.
Use, well,
there were,
you know, the exact is Theodoro and Fletcher. Come on, how could you not have that?
Yeah, I don't bet that way, but
I don't either. But
yeah, so Johnny, I'll tell you who did bet, who bet very well and had a big day. We gotta mention Marshall Graham and the contest, because it seemed like Marshall running second with Warrior's Charge ignited his bid when it came to the Arkansas Derby Day contest on Express Bet.
Yeah, we had another contest with four seats. The top four players won seats for the Pegasus World Cup betting challenge. And Marshall Graham, he came from, I heard you earlier mention that he came from seventh. He was actually, he was fifth with two to go. He dropped back to sixth with one to go. And he roughly went from 5K to 12K in the last race. To move to the top and lead all players. Brian Herdy was second. He came from 11th, made a big move in the last race from $1,500 to $10,000, 99.44.50. Kevin McFarland third. He was in front for a while, and he kind of sat on his lead because I think he thought that his $8,140 would hold on for a seat, and it did. Ronald Myers was second going into the last race, held on to fourth, played a little bit in the last race probably, and finished fourth. So that is the way it turned out this weekend. A big number of players. I think we had like 174 players in the competition, and that enabled the Express Bet to add an additional qualifying seat for the Pegasus World Cup Betting Challenge. Always an entertaining, you know, watching these guys play. They started, for those of you unfamiliar, they started with $500 entry fee, $200 went to the kitty, and $300 was what you played with. And those are big numbers off of $300. That's a pretty good day.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Absolutely. Nice. Well, it's nice. It was nice.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just was going to say it was nice that ExpressBet came up with this. You know, they utilized a few of the late races from Gulfstream and the whole card from Arkansas, and you know, it wasn't originally going to be on the slate. And kudos for giving everybody. Yeah, everybody was handicapping these races anyway, so why not? To make it an opportunity? Nicely done.
Well, it turned out to be popular, and each week I keep saying, well, that's the end of our tournament season, and we come up with another tournament. So this week I'm not going to say it. Check back.
Stay tuned. Well, Johnny, we're going to have one kind of lullish week here, and where there's not going to be a lot of activity. We do have, of course, Fonner and Will Rogers today, tomorrow, Wednesday, Tampa on Wednesday, Gulfstream will be alone on Thursday, and then, you know, into a quiet weekend. But after that, things should start to gear up again, and it'll be, from that point, a nice, steady parade between Santa Anita and Churchill, and we're going to find out this week with updates. In fact, in this hour, we're going to find out shortly, in the next 15 minutes, actually. Andrew Offerman is going to join us after Boyd Browning, and we'll hear about where Canterbury is and, you know, working with the state government about opening up there. But it feels like we're just about ready to go, and it was not our normal Derby day, but it was okay.
Well, you know, the weekend after Derby is always a bit of a letdown. So we're right in step. We're okay with a quiet weekend this weekend. A couple of notes. The Supreme Court is online now, Steve. I know you're going to spend some time listening to the Supreme Court. And also, looks like we lost Don Shula, former coach of the Miami Dolphins. You and I talk so much about football. And certainly Don Shula, when we were growing up, and the Miami Dolphins were a big part of our early career in the NFL, watching and in some cases wagering. But Don Shula gone. What else? I have to think of the other positive note. After last Monday's show, where I guess I whined about not being able to play golf because of the quarantine, apparently the governor of Pennsylvania listens to At the Races with Steve Bick, because not a couple hours after we finished the show, he decided to open golf. So it started up Friday, and we are able to play with, of course, lots of precautions in place. But just being able to get out in the fresh air and knock the ball around is a enjoyment.
Absolutely, absolutely. For those that take part, well, then Johnny, keep it in the fairway, and we will convene next week.
Stevie, have a great show today, and have a great rest of the week. And we'll look forward to lots of tracks coming back online.
Johnny D, everybody, XB Johnny D, and the team at Express Bet, and the summer season not far off. However, it's going to manifest itself, and we'll look forward to that. And right now we're going to look forward to talking to Boyd Browning, and we'll do that after the break, probably our last break of the morning, because we've got way too much to do yet. Boyd Browning, Andrew Offerman, Bob Baffert, and Kim Weir in this next hour at the Races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
Sirius XM.